Today the question I want to ask is, how do you react to another's expression of unhappiness? Imagine that we all have a large panel of buttons on our chest, kind of like a t-shirt, has all these hot buttons on it. You know, the buttons that represent emotional triggers that can be activated by the way we process environmental signals. And you've heard this expression, wow, he really pushed my buttons, or she really pushed her somebody else's buttons, that idea. Environmental signals is an interesting phrase. I first heard it with Bruce Lipton, and he was describing it as these energy forms that were coming from our environments. That we process them as light or sound or touch or taste or smell or anything else that we can sense beyond the five physical senses. And there are external environments and there are internal environments. You know, what's going on in our bodies is the internal environment. So if we're aware of that, we're in a much better position to have information upon which to base a lot more of our decisions. So today I want to talk about one or more buttons that we all have that are connected to images of another person's unhappiness. We've been trained since the earliest days of life to respond or react to other people's unhappiness. I believe that the major cause of illness is self-rejection. And I believe that the major cause of self-rejection is the belief that we have caused another person's pain and unhappiness. I also believe that naturally, we are going to try to fight or separate from the cause of pain and unhappiness, even if we are the cause. We're going to try to separate or fight us. For most of the 1990s, I lived in San Diego, California. I moved there from Manhattan. I was talking one day to my brother back in New York, my younger brother George, and we were discussing a variety of things, you know, kind of like catching up on how life was going for both of us. And we both were in the process of ending relationships. I was ending a 19-year marriage, and George had just ended a 14-year relationship. So during a conversation, George said, "You know, the one thing in the world that is the worst for me is to feel like I caused another person's unhappiness. That's the worst." Immediately, I reacted and said, "Me too, me too. I hate that feeling." And so we both had been trained to be hypersensitive to other people's unhappiness. So, where do you think we got trained? We grew up in a family of origin that had, I think, its share and maybe even more of pain and unhappiness. I'm thinking every family would say, we had our share and more of unhappiness. Very few families are walking around going, you know what, I didn't get my share of pain or unhappiness when I was growing up. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. But this is a fact that seems to make life a lot more complicated, is when we learn as children to be hypervigilant about other people's unhappiness. You know, this idea of walking around on eggshells or not to cause noise or we don't want to trigger any kind of adverse reaction in other people that is going to result in pain for us or anyone else. There are other good reasons that we don't want to contribute to another person's pain or unhappiness. But before I go into those reasons, let me say this. We don't really cause another person's unhappiness. Interpretations are what's causative, and those interpretations are largely under the control of the interpreter. They're much more causative than our actions or inactions. And we all have this experience. One day we do something and the reaction is, oh, that's really cute. That's how people interpret it. Oh, that's really cute. The next day we do the same thing and it's like, wow, that is incredibly annoying and, you know, whatever, some sort of a negative reaction. What provoked happiness on one day seemed to provoke unhappiness on another. And we're going like, I don't understand this. Is it happiness provoking or is it unhappiness provoking? Is determined by the interpreter. Okay, let's go back to some of the reasons not to contribute to another person's pain or unhappiness. I already mentioned the idea that human beings, and frankly, other living things, are going to fight or flee from the perceived source of pain and unhappiness. And we don't want to turn other people and other things into our enemies, because on a very purely biological level, that is going to interfere with our chances of survival. And in a work environment, we do want cooperation. Our chances of success are greater if we have cooperation rather than enmity from our co-workers. This programming, don't make waves, don't bother people, don't anger people, what will the neighbors think, are all examples of this built-in programming that is designed to help us enhance survival by getting along, by fitting in, by belonging, and, frankly, getting our own needs met. Human beings, all of us, have this programming. The variable and the question is this natural sensitivity to other people's happiness, unhappiness, is it underdeveloped? Is it more or less balanced? Or is it overdeveloped? If it's underdeveloped, we can end up running over people like they're not rocks on the ground. We could be bulldozers, steamrollers. It won't make any difference. That when we are not sensitive to other people's needs, you know, it's just a matter of time before there's a negative reaction to that. It's like, that person doesn't treat me like I'm a person. Wow. You know, I'm not committed to that person's happiness or success any more than they are toward mine. I had an expert in the field of human relationships in San Diego with whom I worked for a while tell me that, and he knew my then wife, he realized and said this to me, which caught me by surprise, actually. He said, you know, you're married to a woman who is devoid of compassion. I went, really? I didn't notice that. And then I started to look back in time and realize I never was aware of that in the beginning of our marriage, but over time, all the evidence was stacking up. She was just missing that capacity. She missed it and didn't develop it, wasn't interested in it, and got offended if that subject ever came up by him. And it was like, that's a challenge. And the thought came to me of this image of a seesaw. I'm forever drawing line figures and line drawings for a couple of reasons. I think it's a great way to represent stuff, but it's also an indication of my artistic talent. Is if you draw a seesaw, and on one end you label it in quotes, my happiness. And when I say my happiness, I'm talking about your happiness. And on the other end, you can label the seesaw the other person's happiness. And this might help us put things into perspective in regards to our relationships. I did a Sunday talk recently. I called it Relationships 101. And I think before you get too deep into a relationship, it's kind of a good idea to determine how much we're willing to balance our self-interest with somebody else's. So if we're only interested in getting our own needs met, what makes us happy is the only thing that counts, that's the only thing that registers for the way we think and act, then it pays to know that up front. That is not conducive to a long-term happy relationship. And you could look at it like that and say, I'm willing to balance on this seesaw of life my happiness with their happiness. And actually, their happiness contributes to my happiness. When we get to that position where we're evolved enough to recognize that contributing to somebody else's happiness actually makes us happy, it's like, ooh, this is a good thing. This is a good thing. And if we're in relationship with a person who goes, oh, you know what? Me contributing to somebody else's happiness makes me happy. That is a nice way to play relationship. Now, you could look at this seesaw. First, I would suggest that you look at it from your point of view. Are you willing to balance your self-interest, your desire for happiness, with somebody else's? And if you're not, you're either got a problem personally, or you're not in relationship with a person for whom you value enough. Otherwise, you would be this way. You can also, from a safety standpoint and a long-term relationship standpoint, look at how this other person plays at balancing self-interest. And if there's no concern for yours, only concerned for that other person's, you go, okay, long term, this is not going to be workable. Let me save myself a whole lot of grief and this other person a whole lot of grief and end this relationship if we can't adjust enough to come to terms with this. If this concern for another person's happiness is overdeveloped, it can lead to a couple of different things. Over control of other people. We will not allow them to be unhappy. Don't be that. Don't feel that way. Don't do this. And this is what adults do to children. We can see this showing up as over control of ourselves. I got to keep myself from doing things that are going to make other people unhappy. And so now we get ourselves in a headlock and we restrict our own freedom of expression and behaviors so much so because I don't want to provoke unhappiness. I don't want to cause unhappiness. I don't want to do anything wrong. And I don't want to fall off this tightrope that I think I need to be walking for the rest of my life. You could go, hello. That is a real problem. It's a problem for them in terms of controlling others. It's a problem for us as well. And this idea that if we try to exhibit or exert this level of control over other people and ourselves, we're denying our own sovereignties, their sovereignty over this full range of human behaviors and emotions and thoughts, as well as over our own. I think that's some serious problems right there. Worse yet is this overdevelopment of our concern for other people's unhappiness. I think it can morph into a fear of somebody else's unhappiness, leading to that description that I used before, walking on eggshells, trying to be invisible, trying to be silent, trying to hold back our self-expressions because we're fearing the reactions of others to our self-expression. What we say, what we do, what we think, the way we stand, the way we sit, the way we do anything and everything, the way we eat. And if you've got a background of any of that stuff going on, that's a challenge. And it is, in my opinion, this overdeveloped, exaggerated concerns for other people's reactions is the number one saboteur of success. I would be successful, but I'm afraid of their reactions. Now, very few people are going to be aware enough to understand that and go, you know what? That's true. That's true. The number one saboteur of success is this. I'm afraid of their reactions, so I'm not going to take the action. So you'll have to decide whether that's relevant to you or not. And you could look at what you're doing, seeking approval. Is this okay? Is this okay? Is this okay? Is this okay? Is that okay? Is this okay? And you just go, all these little teeny steps trying to make sure, have I stepped on a landmine yet? Is this explosionary? Is this a problem? Is this going to backfire on me? Is this going to produce anger on your part? All of this stuff. And you go, And then we have ourselves in park. We've got the brakes on our own expression. Real problem. So this is a good segue to the second reason not to contribute to another person's pain and unhappiness. Because it can result in our being rejected, shunned, no longer belonging to our group or tribe. You know, when you get expelled from the group at work or the social club or the clique in high school or even the family unit, bad news. That disconnection increases the chance of death. It did for our ancestors. You know, you get kicked out of the cave, get kicked out of the tribe. It's like you're on your own, dude. You know, you have annoyed all of us by whatever, and then trying to survive on one's own, real problem. It really is important, and it's hardwired into us to try to remain a part of the tribe, and in fact, even to end up becoming the chief of that tribe, one form or another, overtly or covertly. the way we try to use our influence so as to increase our power and influence. The third reason why we don't want to contribute to somebody else's pain or unhappiness is because I believe that at our spiritual core, love is normal, and it's the only ingredient we know at the center of our spiritual being, the real us, not this meat container, not this device that we use to move around in the physical world. I think that's like casing on a fiber optic cable. The spiritual core says, you know what? You know what? I come from love, and I know that love is the only ingredient. That's the thing that will make any and every situation better. It helps bring things together, helps us bond. It reduces the distance on every level, physically, geographically, emotionally, vibrationally, all so we can come together more tightly. It's what is required in order for parts to become whole. They all come together. It's what healing requires. So you go, yeah. If we can improve communication between people and between parts to include the cells of our body, you go, oh, well, that could be the solution to a problem. And if you looked at the various diseases, cancer, for instance, isn't cancer a communication? Isn't it a harmony problem? Don't we have a group, a tribe in the body that's going like, I don't belong, you know, that I don't recognize my contribution to the whole. I don't see how this all works for me. It's like, lack of awareness on the part of the cancer cells says they don't recognize themselves as being an important part of the whole. So where would they have ever gotten that vibration? We know, though, on a spiritual level, at the deepest level, that unifying, bringing things closer, in harmony, is really the goal. I changed the title of this talk today as I was getting ideas for the content. It started out with the title being this: how do you react to another's unhappiness? But it became, how do you react to another's expression of unhappiness? If you've lived on a planet for a while, and anybody old enough to listen to this call certainly has, and if you've had one or more relationships, you already know that expressions of unhappiness are more than signals. They're very often control devices. Think of it. What's a frown? The look. A scowl? The tisk-tisk from someone, right? A small guttural sound that a person can make. Even my puppy, Nikki Nouveau. Nikki will, when she's doing something, and if I go, she will immediately stop what she was about to do. She knows that that expression means stop. It's a control device. I use it as a control device. Think of people who feign sadness to make us feel guilt. Right? People dab at their eyes or get this hangdog look. You know it. You've used it. You've been exposed to it. People have used it on you. People that say, oh, you know, I'm disappointed in you. So we either feel shame or regret. Some people get angry with us in an attempt to get us stop doing what we're doing or don't even begin doing whatever we were thinking of starting. All of these things are control devices, and they express for that reason is control over someone else. You're going to know that right now, as you look at back at what I just said to you, you're going to notice that none of these experiences were for the purpose of encouraging desired behavior, only for stopping or prevented undesired behaviors. I was about to say undesirable behaviors, but that would be inaccurate. One person's desired behaviors can be another person's undesirable behaviors, right? Your desire and my desire for freedom can be interpreted as a threat to somebody else's control. So when we're free, they're looking and going, wow, I lost control over that person. Exactly. That could be threatening to the way they interpret stuff. Your independence, your success, your happiness can all be interpreted by others as evidence that they're not as independent, they're not as successful, they're not as happy as you are. In a small-minded way, they can make you and your independence, your success, your happiness, the saber-toothed tiger. They've got to fight or run away from. Wow, it's your happiness that just convinced me how unhappy I am. And so you're the problem. You're the problem. Hello. That's clearly not accurate. Not accurate. So, what's the main point of this talk? If your reactions to another's expression of unhappiness lowers your emotional state, and it lowers the emotional state of another, you're going to want to heal any of the beliefs that you have that are causative. We can't make all of our decisions based upon other people's rules and opinions or what the neighbors think and so on. If we did, we would be giving up our lives, our own independence, our own dominion over our own behaviors, our own decision-making, our own sovereignty. We don't want to do that. That's a form of suicide. We also don't want to disregard other people completely, because when we do, we're going to reap what we sow. If we sow disrespect, if we sow unkindness, we're going to reap disrespect. We're going to reap unkindness. That's not what we want. As we heal our beliefs about getting what we want from life and what we're willing to put into life, if we're going to reap, we want to sow. As we heal our beliefs, we're going to be elevating our view of what we want. What would make a caveman or a cavewoman happy is going to be different than what would make a saint happy. We have a choice of direction that our awareness is growing, toward being a saint or toward being a cave person. That's pretty simple right there. That's a very simple description of the choices of direction that we have. We could say that one distinct difference between a saint and a cave person would be intention. I'm sure there are whole lots of them. I certainly wouldn't dismiss personal hygiene, right? But intention is a distinct difference. We could phrase that as the intention could be seen as grabbing what we want and preventing other people from getting any of it. And there you would see a person standing with a club or some other device in order to prevent the others from accessing it. Or we could say that intention could be wanting to share what's available while seeking to increase what's available. That's a whole different ballgame right there. Let's share and increase what's available. If I wanted to say it simply in another sentence, I could say one choice would be taking and keeping, and the other would be sharing and growing. I think that the clarification of intention really offers the greatest opportunity for us to create good, to be balanced in our relationship with regard to our desires for happiness and other people's desires for happiness. Clarifying our intention. What is our intention? Caveman? Saint. Caveman? Saint. And we can move toward those directions. If our intention is to have divine consciousness work for us, in us, and through us, then you can say, we're going to begin to be more certain, more balanced, more aligned, more supported, more connected, more empowered, and confident. If our intention is to express divine consciousness by supporting others in recognizing and having the items of the truth of existence, we will have aligned our importances, what we believe to be important and valuable, with the items that Christ has said divine consciousness knows are important and valuable. Growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, rhythm, all within a system of spiritual law and order. If divine consciousness thinks those are important, it's like, maybe we ought to as well. If our intention is to grow our awareness to the point of unconditional love for others, we will be sowing the highest vibration seed thoughts and actions possible. And it seems inevitable that the harvest of those seeds planted is going to be really very positive and wonderful. If we want success in order to more fully express and show divine consciousness in our lives, we're not going to have that internal spiritual conflict that comes when we violate this core spiritual mandate, if you will. We're going to be aligned with our spiritual self when we align with expressing divine consciousness. On the other hand, if success is an ego-driven, I want to dominate, I want to prove that I'm more than, I want to prevent others from accessing these gifts, that sort of thing, we're going to be at war with the reactions of unhappiness of other people, and I think even more destructively, we're going to be at war with our own unhappiness, with ourselves, because these low vibrations, thoughts, feelings, and actions are not in harmony with who we are. And then finally, if we're out of sync, we're completely malaligned with God's intentions, it's hard to imagine that we're going to end up being happy. I would like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 from the book Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.